Thanks, Greg. Yes, we're here with Christopher Rouse after the world premiere of his organ concerto. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That was a very moving and compelling piece. What was it like for you to listen to it for the first time?
Well, you know, it's always difficult. Premieres are difficult for me because I'm hearing the piece for the first time, usually the day before the audience hears it for the first time. And so I just have to hope that there are not too many blemishes because it's too late to change much of anything anyway. So I must admit it's a little bit easier to hear a piece that I've already heard, but hear another performance of it. So I won't say I'm a nervous Nelly, but I'm always a little uncertain as to how things are going to go. Not in terms of the quality of the performance. I knew I was in great hands, obviously, with the orchestra and the maestro and with Paul Jacobs, who's such a fabulous player. But you never know how the piece is going to really sound until you hear it. And in this case, I'd finished the piece about 2.5 years ago. I like to stay ahead of the curve. But the downside of that is that by the time I got here and heard the first rehearsals, I'd totally forgotten the piece. I had no memory of it at all. So it really was like hearing somebody else's piece almost for the first time.
Well, that's very interesting because I've heard you talk about listening to music as a listener as opposed to listening as a composer.
Well, I try to write music that I would like to listen to as a listener. And I think it would behoove composers who don't do that to do it more often, to think about what this will be like, what the experience will be like for just an imaginary listener in the hall rather than as the composer. And I find that that's been very helpful to me as a composer to just put myself in other people's places or to try.
You've been composing since you were about 6 or 7 years old, I understand, after you were moved by Beethoven and Prokofiev. You've, at this point, composed concertos for so many different instruments, for flute, violin, cello, trumpet, guitar. Composing for organ must be very different from those instruments. Each of these have issues of balance and what kind of relationship you establish with the orchestra. What's it like to compose for the organ?
Well, you mentioned balance. That's one thing that isn't an issue in writing for organ and orchestra. If anything, the worry is that the organ will be too loud for the orchestra. Whereas in, say, the guitar, you have to be very careful to not have the orchestra play too thickly or too loudly because the solos will be covered up. The organ, I mean, every instrument has its own idiosyncrasies, and the organ, of course, it's not just a piano with pedals. It's not just that the organist uses his feet as well as his hands. But the fact that the organ has so many colors, so many color combinations, and also that, the response, what we would call response time, is not like it is with a piano. You play a note on the piano and you get bum. With the organ, everything's more of a whom, whom. There's a delay, a slight delay, which can be very challenging when you're trying to coordinate the organ with, say, an orchestra or with other instruments. But again, we're dealing with experts here, so I knew that wouldn't be a worry.
You write in the program notes that this piece doesn't really have a program, but all your music aims to express emotional states. And you've talked about expressive urgency as being important to you.
Yes, I certainly always have believed that issue of style, whether a piece is consonant or dissonant or complex or simple, those are not nearly as important as the issue of expressivity. Is it communicating something meaningful to the listener on an emotional level? That's all I care about as a composer. Technical issues are there to make whatever it is I'm trying to say more coherent, perhaps. And I think we went through an unhealthy period where music was only about the techniques involved in putting it together. That was half a century ago. So I'm glad to see that we've moved away from that to a large extent. But yes, if you're going to say something, say it with conviction. I've never been accused of subtlety. I do tend to either whisper or shout. But that's, I find, the best way to get people's attention. If you just kind of speak in a normal voice in a kind of phlegmatic way like I'm doing right now, probably people are tuning us out, right? As we speak. No, if you want to get people's attention, you either whisper so quietly that they really have to work hard to hear what you're saying, or you shout at them and you scare the bejesus out of them. Or at least, you know, you get their attention that way. You curl their hair or whatnot. So I will admit that I do tend to go to extremes often in terms of just getting the listener's attention. That's number one. You can't communicate if you don't have the listener's attention. As to, you know, beyond that, the issues of communication, sometimes pieces are programmatic, as you mentioned. Sometimes they're about something or inspired by something. In this case, it's meant to express, I mean, for example, the first movement is meant to be very joyous and festive. The last movement is kind of a wild dance, a little diabolical, perhaps. And the middle movement is meant to be very spiritual. But there's no story connected with the piece. It's about the notes and the rhythms and the colors and the dynamics and what they may express on a more general level.
Thank you so much, Christopher Rouse. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and congratulations again on your new concerto.
Thank you so much.